Ready to launch a new career or not sure what to do after graduation? Rumpke is hiring for CDL driving trainees. We pay you to get your CDL license while working for us. Driver trainees receive $18 an hour, great benefits, and Rumpke will pay your CDL costs. Once you're a CDL driver, you can earn $1,000 to $1,300 a week and more than $10,000 in bonuses possible in your first year. Apply today and launch a lucrative career at Rumpke. Apply now at RumpkeCareers.com. Equal opportunity employer. Restrictions apply.
From coast to coast, border to border, and around the world, you're going online with Bill Alexander. Laugh and learn while you listen to a brilliant display of radio. Online with Bill Alexander. Bill
Alexander. Hi, everyone. Yours truly, William Eric Alexander. All my friends call me Bill, and you're online with Bill Alexander here on WMCK.FM, the Kingsport. Monday, Tuesday, and Friday at 10 p.m., 107.5 FM, WLDJ Newcastle, 1620 AM, Huntington Community Radio, Huntington, Saturdays at 7 a.m., Mixtape Radio International, mtri.co.uk, Mondays at 10 p.m. Eastern, Steel FM, steelfm.org, and Scunthorpe, I can say it, United Kingdom, Fridays at 3 p.m. Eastern, WWSX Radio 99.1 FM, Rehoboth Beach, Radio Rehoboth, Tuesdays at 6 p.m., Orca Radio at orcaradio.coffeecup.com, Owensboro, Kentucky, Tuesdays at 10, Good Talk Radio, www.goodtalkradio.com, Sundays at 11 p.m. Eastern, and streaming online at pghtalkradio.com. Good evening, everybody. Yours truly, Bill Alexander. Well, something unusual this evening. Well, maybe not unusual, but maybe a little bit different than normal. The reason is I'm asking another podcaster on the program, but what's interesting about it is he teaches people how to podcast. Now, a little bit apprehensive about it because I've been doing it for so long, and maybe I've been doing it wrong. I don't know. It's like getting your IQ tested. If you've do really well on the IQ test, you're going to be disappointed that you haven't achieved more. If you've done really poorly, you could be thrilled because you've done so well in life. But again, I think it's like that. So you got to be careful. On the phone line right now, we have Colin Gray of the podcasthost.com. Colin, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing very well, thanks. How about yourself?
So Colin, where are you from?
I'm from Dundee, Scotland, originally.
Okay. I thought I was hearing a Scottish accent there. I just wanted to make sure. Because we usually don't hear a lot of that in the United States.
No, but in my experience, whenever I go to the US, everyone claims to be from Scotland originally. So it must be.
Well, my wife just found out that she is a part Scottish, well, a very small part Scottish, as they did the Ancestry.com thing. And, of course, yes. Now my daughter felt that she could talk with a Scottish accent for a period of time, which made it
cool. I do a lot of attempts at U.S. and Australian and different accents. So it's okay if you guys butcher ours as well.
Anyhow, so what got you in the field of podcasting?
I started out in education, actually. So it was teaching at a university and helping lecturers to learn how to use technology in general to teach their students, to help their students learn. And podcasting was one of the fancy, fashionable techs back then as well. So I was actually just told to go and learn it back in about 2007, 2008.
Okay.
And I just kind of fell in love with the medium at the time, actually. I just really enjoyed the kind of, I don't know, the long form medium, the fact that it's really easy to create, just pull out your mic and start speaking. And it's quite personal as well. You know, you feel like you're kind of speaking one to one. And when you're a listener, you feel a real connection with the podcaster or the speaker too. So that's how I started my journey in it.
So what do you consider different between podcasting and radio?
I mean, really, podcasting is very similar in terms of the format. The benefit we have is that we have no limitations.
Okay.
So generally, on a radio station, you know, you've got within frameworks, you've got time limits, you've got to be there at certain times. So, I mean, one of the great things about podcasting is that I can create a month's worth of content in one day. I can sit down and just record for 2 or 3 hours, do a batch of stuff, schedule them all up, and then they go out, and I don't need to be around. So, I mean, it's as a creator, there's so much more freedom and so much more flexibility.
So, have you worked with former broadcasters that have gone into podcasting?
Yeah, a fair few indeed. Yeah, I mean, in the UK, certainly where I'm from originally, there are a lot of broadcasters getting into podcasting, as I think a lot of the local stations have kind of cut down in terms of the reach that they have.
Right.
So a lot of them have come into it. And I've worked with some really good ones over the years. And actually, some of the best have been ones that haven't been forced out. They've not been downsized by the radio stations, but they've realized the kind of the benefit of starting their own brand and going their own way and creating their own show on podcasting, the flexibility to the fact that they can have ownership over it entirely.
Because I've learned the hard way. I started in broadcasting 30 plus years ago. Markets were being bought out, stations were being bought out. In 2006, somebody approached me and said, "Hey, you got to try this." And I had a small studio in my house at the time, and I said, "Sure, I'll give it a shot." And I was using a service out of the Pittsburgh region that was actually a voice bridge, where you could actually talk to individuals live on the program, and did it for about six years from 2006 to 2012. Then I basically put everything in a box and said, "I'm done." And in 2018, I started all over again because I was noticing that what I liked to listen to wasn't there anymore. And the type of radio or talk podcasting I did wasn't there either. So I figured if no one's going to do it, I might as well do it again, and started the brand up all over again out of the blue, which, trust me, this starting the second time in 2018, when there's so many more alternatives out there compared to what it was in 2006, I was making amazing numbers in 2006. 12 years later, it's a totally different ball game. And I've been doing it ever since. But the one thing I did differently is I actually started marketing the program as a radio show for other outlets that needed to fill airtime. So the program is done as a radio program, but it's also packaged as a podcast. So those that don't listen to it live can listen to it at a later time. And that's the way that I was able to do it. But I find it interesting that a lot of people are getting into this because they have a message that they want to get out to the public. Now, are you noticing any hang-ups with people before they get started? Or do they come to you and say, "I want to start a podcast, but I have no idea what I want to talk about"?
Yeah, there's a bit of both. There's a lot of hang-ups in terms of confidence, in terms of voice, because, I mean, the ones that come in as broadcasters like yourself, you know how to speak, you know how to present, you know how to put yourself across on a mic. But so many of the people that come to us, they just want to get their message out. Like you say, they're really passionate about something, but they don't know how to speak. They don't know how to present. They don't know how to plan content on a weekly basis. So there's those initial hang-ups around the confidence, but then there's just the simple act of coming up with something week by week by week. And even if people are really passionate about it, sometimes they struggle with that. So, yeah, I mean, it's a struggle in many ways. But then once we get them into the routine, once we teach them some tricks around how to, you know, break down topics, how to canvas your listeners, that kind of stuff, they realize that it's actually relatively easy and it's something that can just be learned.
Now, I know getting into this can be an expensive, as I call it, an expensive hobby. But how do you get someone started on a low budget? I mean, extremely low budget.
Yeah. I mean, the lowest budget is just use the gear that you've got.
Okay.
A lot of the people out there that want to start a podcast will have a smartphone, for example. And it's not the best quality audio in the world, but actually a decent quality smartphone, just hold it up to your mouth, upside down, the mic's on the bottom generally, and you can use that as a mic. Just record directly into the Dictaphone app. And that's actually, I mean, that's perfectly good enough quality to start out with. If you want to test your first 10 episodes with that kind of setup, you'll sound fine. You'll sound absolutely fine. And then if you want to upgrade from there, generally, the best starter mic that we recommend, there's one called the Samson Q2U. So that's S-A-M-S-O-N, Samson Q2U. Mm. Great little mic, under $100, and it sounds great. It sounds brilliant. And that's a really nice way to start.
Whenever you have people do this, because I know one of the things that when you talk to someone who goes into podcasting, always in the back of their mind, this is what they're going to do to be able to quit their job and actually support themselves doing this. And that is very difficult to do because it's very difficult to monetize a program where you don't, where your audience is so broad that you're not just focusing on one area or one location?
Well, actually, so, I mean, the way that I tend to advise people to focus is less on location, less on area, and more on topic. So, I mean, if you're starting a podcast, generally the first thing we do is, you know, often people will come to us and they'll say something like, right, I'm into running. I'm going to do a podcast about running. I'm going to talk about everything to do with running. And the first thing we do is often say, right, okay, so that sounds good. You know, 5 years down the line, we can be talking about everything running. But let's say for the first 6 months, the first year, you're going to go specific. What about running do you like the most? And they'll say, oh, well, it's trail running. And I'll say, okay, cool, good. What about trail running? They'll say, oh, well, actually, there's these races that I love. They're like long endurance races. And suddenly you're down to something really specific. You're doing a show for runners who love to do 100-mile plus trail runs. And that means you're super specific. And that ties right into the monetization, because then you can reach out to product companies that cater to that really tight little niche. So people that make shoes that are super tailored to long, long distance endurance events. And that advertiser, that shoe manufacturer knows every person in your audience wants their shoes, or at least could be very, very amenable to taking those shoes. And that's where you start to monetize, because you can be so focused. You can say, I've only got 1,000 listeners at this point, but, you know, 500 of these listeners will literally be really interested in your shoes. So even though it's small numbers, it's really high conversion. So that's how we tend to think about it in terms of the focus, certainly.
Which is really interesting, because in the days, and this may be why I think of it the way I do, because in the days of radio, we thought of a local area. If we're selling widgets, we're selling to that local area. Now, if I'm doing a local widget company, I would have to still sell it in that area, because people are not going to come from to do things from around to come get them unless they have an online presence. So I can see where that being a different thing. But again, if I'm looking at monetizing, and I will use your example of long distance running, how do you start marketing the program so people can find it? Because there is so many other programs out there that are dealing with that topic. How do you stand yourself out among everybody else?
Yeah, well, the niche really helps with that. So thinking about not just running, but long distance running, and not just long distance running, but maybe racing or trail running, that's when you start to get really niched down, so that actually the competition is not half as hard as you think.
Okay.
Because as soon as you have somebody that's really passionate about that area, they're going to listen to 3, 4, 5, 6 different podcasts about that topic. And actually, if you look in iTunes, you look in Apple Podcasts and search for some of these really specific topics like that, you'll find there are there's 2 million podcasts out there right now, but so many of them are not active. Many of them are very general. So you actually go nice and niche, nice and specific, and suddenly you'll find yourself in a group of only 5 to 10 shows about that particular topic, in many, many different topics. So suddenly that's your marketing done for you. Because somebody types in long distance trail running into Apple Podcasts.
Okay.
And actually, you're only appearing there with 5 or 10 other shows. So in many ways, that niching is a big part of your marketing. But I mean, adding on to that, suddenly you then have to think about the uniqueness. So the next part of that is, I think it's uniqueness. It's what do you offer? What about your background really makes people want to listen to you as opposed to the competition? And maybe in the running example, for example, it might be that you have completed, you know, 10 different 1,000-mile runs over the last couple of years. Or maybe you came back from a horrible accident and long-distance trail running, you know, helps you recover your body. Or, you know, there can be all these different life stories that tie into it and really capture people's imagination and make them think, oh, yeah, this is the guy that I want to learn from. This is the guy that's had an experience that I want to learn from and that's relevant to me. So it's that uniqueness, think about that background, that experience, that personality type of yourself, and tie that into the description, into the title, and the artwork, and the whole brand. And really, that's what, to me, brings people to your show.
Okay. Because I've never looked at it that way. Now, you're focusing on the Apple Podcasts. Now, is it better just to be on one distributor like that, or is it better to be on many? like Stitcher, like Deezer, like
Be Everywhere.
Be Everywhere. And why Be Everywhere?
Yes, indeed, yeah. Because you're publishing your podcast in the open ecosystem anyway.
Right.
So your podcast goes out there from your podcast hosting provider. So that's just the company that actually makes your podcast available to the world. Then you take that and you post it in all of the directories. Because there's no benefit in being exclusive. There's no benefit in only being an Apple podcast, because then you're ruling yourself out of being listened to by everyone with an Android phone. So you might as well list in Apple Podcasts, in Spotify, in Google Podcasts, places like Stitcher, TuneIn Radio. TuneIn Radio is a great one because that gets you onto Alexa smart speakers and all.
Right.
So yeah, absolutely. I mean, you cover those ones that I just mentioned, though, and that's 99% of all listeners. So as long as you're in those top 3 to 4 platforms, you're all good.
One thing I have learned, because I've been on TuneIn since 2006, that I changed podcast hosts about 3 years ago, or 2 years ago it's been. And I changed it, but the problem is I can't change it in Tuned In. So I still have to have the old host, and I actually duplicate my programs on 2 different providers just so I can still have that TuneIn outlet on there. And it's like, that gets a little bit crazy at times, but you got to do what you got to do to get those numbers up. And that's what I think is very interesting, because on one side, I monetize through the service provider that I'm using, and the other side, I'm not. And I start seeing a difference on who's listening to what, and trying to force them over to something else is not the easiest thing to do. So you just give in and you just keep everything going the way it was going before. So with this whole craze going on, where do you see podcasts going? Because I'll be honest with you, in 2006, when I originally started, I did not think it was going to take off the way it has, especially in the last 5 years. And I have interviews that I've done with people that were just starting out the same way I was. And I said, the only way that this is really going to be able to take off is when it's going to be convenient and easy for us to access. And within the last 5 and 10 years, it became so simple because of how smart smartphones got that they download automatically for you, unlike they did before. And not only that, you're now able to listen to them with ease in your vehicle when you drive to work or wherever you're going. So you plug the phone in or you do it through Bluetooth and it's automatically there on the dash. You press 2 buttons, you're playing what you're listening to, and no one's forcing you to listen to something you don't want to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, I mean, that was what was it, 2 or 3 years ago now. There was a couple of things happened. One was that Apple made the podcasting app automatic. It was a default on your phone. So everyone, no matter, they didn't have to choose to have this podcasting app. And that was brilliant for us because it just meant that, you know, for the big majority, not a majority, but for the big number of Apple devices out there, you could say, oh, do you listen to podcasts? And they go, no. You go, all right, do you have an Apple phone? Okay, give me that. Let me show you this app that you've got right here. And you can search for some topics. And that really helped people come into it. And I mean, the growth has been great since then. We've got, I think it's something like, it's over half, certainly, of people in the US in the stats, the last time I looked, that have listened to a podcast at least once. And weekly listening is growing really well as well. We've got, I think it's around a third now, people listen to podcasts on a weekly basis. So that's some great growth. But I mean, you look at that and you think that's great growth, but then that's a whole bunch of people that still don't listen. So all this growth that we still have, another 2/3 of people in the US alone haven't listened to a podcast on a regular basis. So they're the ones we've got to convince and bring in.
So whenever someone comes to you and they're looking at your service and they say, I want to create a podcast, do you help direct them in the area they need to go into? Or do you say, no, here's the skills you need. Now you go figure out what you want to do.
Yeah, we do a bit of both. So we have a tool, for example, called Alitu that helps people make their podcast. So people that just want to make it easy, they know what they want to do, they can just use that. But a lot of people come to us and need help around that topic as well. Like I said, the biggest mistake is usually people come to us and they say, I know I want to talk about something around, you know, relationships or, you know, happiness, life success, that kind of stuff. It's the health, wealth and happiness topics. always want to talk about, but they don't know specifically how to go. So it's always that first couple of months is really narrowing down to exactly what problem people want to solve. Make that really specific, really niche. What problem are you solving for people that's really quite specific, that catches attention? And then how are you going to uniquely solve it? How are you, you know, your experience, your skills, how are you going to apply that to the problem to be a unique solver of that problem? And that's really the first month or two, certainly, when we're talking to people.
Okay. And when, because I'm looking at your site right now, which is thepodcasthost.com, and I'm looking through it, and I see how to start a podcast in 20 steps. Now, when I look at that, What are the most important steps after deciding what you're going to do it on?
Well, that's the funny part is that is the most important step, like you say, but that's the one that people often miss. They often jump straight into the following steps, which is choosing a microphone, choosing your podcast hosting, and then learning how to record and how to edit. So the most important literally is figuring out your topic and your solution and your problem and all that kind of stuff, because that's really what ties people in. But beyond that, like you say, so gear is important, microphones, where you record, so people can record online calls like we're doing just now, or some people record in person. So deciding what your format is in that way makes a big difference. And then setting up the website side of things, so actually signing up for a podcast hosting platform And putting it onto a website. But so much of that is so much easier these days. Like, that's another thing that's become so much easier in terms of actually just getting your podcast online, because all the podcast hosting companies basically take care of that for you. And the last bit is the publishing. It's actually getting out there, getting it live and submitting it to Apple Podcasts, Google, and Spotify. Really, that's the main steps.
Now, one thing, and I will say this because of what has happened in the world with the pandemic, is that last year at this time, actually in the beginning of March, I went out and bought a separate audio board, separate mics, and a separate recorder, so I could actually now leave the studio and go public and actually go to the people that I was going to interview. But unfortunately, We got hit with a pandemic, and I'm still stuck in my studio.
Yeah.
And it's starting to ease up a little bit, where people are starting to get a little bit comfortable with starting to go back out into the world. But I don't see that happening as quickly as we were hoping that it would be. I'm looking for my first face-to-face interview coming in sometime in June, and I am in talks with a couple people to do that. But do you see, with what has happened in 2020 with the pandemic, do you see that basically reintroducing podcast and podcasting to the world and saying, you have nothing else to do, you might as well give it a listen?
Yeah, I mean, the growth in listening was certainly pretty good during last year. The growth in podcast creation was huge. It was all these people being stuck at home, more time in their hands potentially because they're maybe furloughed from work, that kind of stuff.
Right.
Just wanted to give it a try. So, I mean, that was pretty good. But, no, I can't wait for the in-person stuff to come back, because I mean, online, the technology is great these days for running online calls, for recording online podcasts, but nothing beats being with somebody to create great conversations, create that engagement, that back and forth, the quality of the content you can create with one person in a room with you. It's just so much better than being on an online call. And you get better at the online calls, you get used to it, you get used to sort of picking up the cues and dealing with the lag and the glitches and stuff like that. So you can create great content online, but it's just so much more fun and so much more natural in person.
So when I talk podcast, I am referring to audio only. Now, there's also video podcasting. Is there a learning curve when it comes to doing video podcasting?
I mean, the big difference to me is the worry about the visuals.
Okay.
So suddenly you have to worry about these other things, which include lighting, which include what you're wearing, include backgrounds, include, you know, just even worrying about how you look at the camera at the same time as maybe having some notes in front of you to know what you're going to cover. So there is a whole bunch more complication around creating video. It's so much easier to create audio than video, which is a big reason why I think podcasting has become so popular in the last few years. So, I mean, I'm never even convinced of the benefit either, because I think one of the big powers of podcasting is the fact that you can listen to it while you're doing other things.
Right.
You can be cooking your dinner and listen to a show, or you can be washing your clothes or ironing or walking the dog or whatever. All of these places where you couldn't watch a video, you know, it's almost hard to fit in video watching time. When I have a video course or some video learning that I want to watch, I often just rip out the audio and then stick it in as a podcast and listen to it that way. So I'm not sure. We do help people set up video podcasts, but often I say the best thing to do is to create it as an audio podcast, but put on some of the episodes on YouTube. Maybe okay. Even take just highlights and don't put the whole thing on. But I almost treat them as separate things.
Because I in the real world outside of doing this, I've done radio and I've done local TV, and it is it's much more difficult, in my opinion, to be able to do video, because if you're a perfectionist, you want that quality perfect. And there's so many other things that can go wrong when you're shooting video than with audio. If something goes wrong and you have a backup recorder, computer, whatever it is, all you do is plug in and everything's working for you. So it's not as bad. And if worse comes to worse, you pull your phone out, put it on the table, and you start talking. So you have fallbacks, unlike video, where you actually need it. The other thing is that I think is interesting, and I love this. It says choosing a podcast title, choosing a good episode title. What does that mean?
Yeah, sure. It means not naming your episode title after what so many people do, which is an episode title which says something like episode 22- Brian Jones
okay.
- and then something else. So many people name their episodes starting with the number of the episode and even the word episode, and then literally just the name of the person. And obviously, you know, if you have the most famous person, like Mark Maron interviewing Barack Obama, for example.
Yes.
So having a really famous name that people know, okay, fair enough, put the name on first. But for 99% of listeners, they're not going to know the people you're talking to. Like, practically no one listening to your show right now will know who I am. So putting Colin Gray in the title is useless. Episode titles need to draw people in. They need to make maximum use of the space allowed, because you only have 30, 40 characters
right.
to really draw people in. People are going to be looking through the feed. They're going to be searching in Apple Podcasts. They're going to see this title, and that title needs to draw that person in right away. So the title needs to have really just the problem that you're going to solve right up front. So people see it and they go, oh, yeah, that's something that I want to know about. That's something that I struggle with, or that's something that I want to learn more about right away. So that's a big part of it. I mean, it sounds really obvious, but if you look through a lot of the shows that you'll find on iTunes, they don't do that. It's all about names. It's like adding in episode numbers. It's wasting
right.
characters and all these details that people, the listener, just doesn't care about.
Okay, so I have to name this program tonight. What would you call it?
Yes. I would call it something like, I mean, what are we talking about? We're talking about how to create a podcast that draws listeners, potentially. So, or even, I mean, you can go even wider than that, because maybe people don't really care about starting a podcast, but actually you'll have some of your listeners that want to grow an audience. They want to grow fans around their personal
okay.
brand, for example, something like that. So maybe how to grow listeners, how to grow an audience around your personal brand, or how to, you can always go the clickbaity route, which is how to make money through growing an audience, through growing a brand.
Yeah, I feel guilty doing that, to be honest with you. I had a woman on last week that does a podcast, and She got in about 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, and it's called The Really Famous Podcast. Well, the thing is, she's mm-hmm. interviewing really famous people, and how she mm-hmm. was able yeah. to break down that barrier to call celebrities and whoever they were to get them in, all she does have to do is put their name in the title. People will search them, And then all of a sudden, she gets listenership. And she said that at first she didn't think that was going to work, but she says all she has to do is if there's something that is big on TV or streaming online and she interviews them, she puts their name in the feed or in the title, and all of a sudden, I mean, she just gets hits over and over again because they're popular.
Yeah.
It's the less people, the authors, the new musicians and stuff like that, where it gets difficult to put them in, because yes, they have great content, but how do you get an audience to listen to them or be attracted to them? The other thing I noticed too, and I think is very interesting, is that when in the title, like you said, that for some reason people feel the need to put the name of the program in the title of the program, even though it has its own page.
Yeah.
So it would be This Week in Podcasting, and it says, This Week in Podcasting, we are going to do this, this, and this. And it's like, you just wasted the title that's on your page already.
Yeah.
Just say what you're going to do. And I don't think people understand that when they start. I think they feel that whenever it goes out there into the internet world, that it's going to go out by itself and there's not going to be anything identifying it. And then that is where you need to start talking about good, solid descriptions so the audience knows what they're listening to.
Yeah, totally. I totally agree. And it's you've got to assume that just about everybody looking at your description, your podcast, they've got a tiny attention span, like worse than a goldfish. They're going to read like 5 or 10 words max.
Right.
And if those 5 or 10 words don't rip them, they're going to move on to the next one. So those first 5 or 10 words have to say something really, really compelling. And usually, yeah, the name of the person or the name of the show or the episode number, that's not best.
And I know people that like putting the episode number in because it makes them feel important that they've done so many shows.
Yes.
And that goes into the next thing. How long do you do a show before you give up on it? Or do you never give up on it and you just keep hoping that the more you do, the better it gets and the more people start to listen?
Yeah, I mean, I think consistency and longevity are a huge part in growing that audience. I mean, podcasting is, and this disappoints a lot of people, but it is definitely a long game. It's not a fast grower. Like you don't tend to see podcasts take off like a rocket like you might some other mediums, because there's bigger barriers to listening. You know, there tend to be long form, maybe even an hour long sometimes. So it just takes a little while for people to get in. But it's definitely worthwhile, because people that do get into them, they become really big fans of podcasting. It grows the most loyal listeners out there. So it's just, it's such a worthwhile thing to get into.
And the other thing I've noticed, we used to do conferences here in the United States, and I don't know if you're familiar with them, but they were called pod camps, where we would get a group of podcasters from a local area and we would speak to the public about what we were doing. And this was in the early days. And the word that everybody was afraid of using, they were using the word pod fade, is when you started to lose interest in what you were doing. And like you said, you start to notice that there's no more programs out there. Do you, and this is going to be a really odd question for me to ask, because we're talking about getting one started. Is there a proper way to end a podcast?
I mean, I think, I suppose I didn't even answer the question you asked before very strictly in terms of like how long does one go? But this ties into it, the how do you end one? I mean, I think the more you do a podcast, the longer you do a podcast, the better you get at it in the first place, the practice you put into it, but also the more loyal your listeners become. So
right.
2 or 3 years in, the great thing about it is that even if you start to deviate away from, you know, I'm not so interested in this topic anymore, let's say, or, you know, I'd like to talk about this other thing. By that point, many of your listeners, a big proportion of your listeners, will actually be listening, not even so much for the topic, but for you. They'll know you. They'll be familiar with you. They like you. They consider you a friend. Like, that's the thing with radio, with podcasting, with audio things. It's such a low barrier between you and the person speaking, because, you know, the audio is kind of injected straight into your head and it's so personal that you feel it's very much more familiar than a TV, you know, with a screen in between you and this kind of
right.
perfect thing on TV. So they'll be willing to go with you. You can say, right, I'm going to change topic. This is no longer the long-distance running show. This is actually the health and well-being show because I'm much more interested in nutrition now. Who wants to come along with me on that? And a big proportion of your audience probably will come with you on it because it's you, because it's your personality, it's your approach to things they like. So I would say it's less about finishing a show in that way, and it's more about engaging with your audience and asking, you know, who would like to hear me speak about this or that or this or that? And you can change a show. You can rebrand a show really easily. But equally, you can just say, right, we're going to finish. I feel like this has come to an end. But I'm starting another show over here, which is called This, This, and This. Anyone that wants to follow me to that show, go for it. But if you're not, then by all means, the back catalogue will always be here. You can always listen. Thanks for listening. So I think it can work either way.
One thing I've learned, and I learned it, again, the hard way, because this was so new when I started, that I did a program that I did for quite a few years. The program I'm doing now I've always done, but I've done one in association with it. And for some strange reason, the supplement started to outpace the actual show, which was very interesting.
Okay.
And I noticed that I stopped doing it, and all of a sudden there was this growth that was developed. And I mean, these people were still listening to it and still downloading it. So I decided, you know what, let's try it again. Now, of course, that was the early days of podcasting when there was not much to listen to. Now trying to bring it back again, it's very difficult because how long do you stay in it trying to recreate what you've done, or do you try to create something new that's related to what you've talked about before? And that's one of the things I think a lot of people are going to deal with over a period of time. And I think what you said is a good advice is that if you do move your audience with you. Don't just disappear, then come back again. Just move them with you and move them gradually.
Yeah, and I've seen that done time and time again. Actually, there's a friend of mine called Janet Murray who runs a really good show. She started out being a PR expert, so she just taught companies how to do better PR. So her show was called, I think it was Soul for PR initially. But then she moves more towards, you know, general growth and marketing for companies and rebranded the show to be about that, about 100 episodes in. And then she just wanted to talk about everything, business and life, and she rebranded it to the Janet Murray podcast. So it had all these different lives, expanded by topic, expanded out and out and out. And actually, she's just shut it down and started a new show, which is related, but a very different format. So she's just been quite... And her audience has barely dropped every time, and it's grown after every rebrand as well. So it's entirely possible to just, you know, change. And it's one of the things that people are always really afraid of, actually. Like, we talk about that niching at the start, like thinking about, people really get wound up about, what's my podcast going to be about? What topic am I going to talk about? How am I going to name it? It's all, people shouldn't worry about it so much because it's quite fluid. You can change it 10, 20, 30 episodes. In fact, you should change it 20, 30 episodes in, because by that point, probably you'll have a bunch of listeners, and actually you should learn from them. You should say, this was my idea about what the show was going to be about, but actually you guys are now listening. What do you really want it to be about? What parts do you like? What parts do you not like? What would you like me to talk about more? What would you like me to talk about less? And evolve based on that. So it's a good show should change, I think, over time quite greatly.
Now, I need to apologize to my radio audience right now because I forgot to do an ID because we've gotten so involved in the conversation. But you're listening to Online with Bill Alexander here on WMCK.FM, McKeesport, 107.5 FM, WLDJ, Newcastle, 1620 AM, Huntington Community Radio, Mixtape Radio International, Steel FM at steelfm.org, WWSX Radio 99.1 FM, Radio Rehoboth in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, Orca Radio, it is orcaradio.coffee. Coffee cup, I can say it tonight, .com in Owensburg, Kentucky, and then streaming online at pghtalkradio.com.
If you've been a renter, you know it's stressful to find the perfect place. But Zillow Rentals make it easy. They have filters for pretty much everything, so you can find a rental that's big enough for entertaining your friends, but small enough they won't crash all weekend. Find your sweet spot on ZillowRentals.com. If you've been a renter, you know it's stressful to find the perfect place. But Zillow Rentals make it easy. They have filters for pretty much everything, so you can find a rental that's big enough for entertaining your friends, but small enough they won't crash all weekend. Find your sweet spot on ZillowRentals.com. If you've been a renter, you know it's stressful to find the perfect place. But Zillow Rentals make it easy. They have filters for pretty much everything, so you can find a rental that's big enough for entertaining your friends, but small enough they won't crash all weekend. Find your sweet spot on ZillowRentals.com.
A social distancing tip.
Putting distance between yourself and others is critical to slowing the spread of coronavirus. So here are ways to stay in contact without the physical contact part. Call, send a text, set up a video conference, post on social media, dedicate a song on the radio. If you have symptoms of fever, dry cough, and shortness of breath, call your healthcare provider before going to their office. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hey, Sean Casey here, former WOR-FM DJ. And you're listening to Online with Bill Alexander.
Again, when I get involved in conversation, in the old days when I was in a radio studio, there was a clock in front of me, and it would tell me when I'd have to break. Now I don't have the clock because this is so much free form compared to the old days that I just get lost in conversation. Now, which brings up a good point. Do you recommend for new hosts to script their podcasts?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's no getting around this, I think. I think a lot of people try and go freeform. They think, oh, it's great, I'm just going to talk about something that I love. But it just leads to quite a bit of fluff. And the trouble is, these days, like we talked about attention span, you want to try and keep things concise. You want to try and keep it value-packed. And having at least an outline plan, even if it's just four or five bullet points, so that you say, well, I'm going to talk about this for 5 minutes, I'm going to talk about this for 10, talk about this for five, and that keeps you kind of on track and from deviating too much. I think it is worthwhile. And often podcasters will start out with a really detailed script. You know, their first 5 or 10 episodes, they'll have quite a lot of notes. Right. Then they'll move towards something a bit more rough, and then maybe you'll just have an outline script towards the end. So, I mean, I'm curious, actually, what kind of a script do you have for radio shows? I've no experience in that. Like, would you have something similar for a radio
show?
What
do I have? I have absolutely nothing. But this has been years of doing this because a lot of it is memorization. But what I do have in front of me right now is I have two computer screens that are up. One is your website. One has my information on it, and then there's one that I'm able to flip through if needed onto Facebook or Twitter because I have people listening live that ask questions. And then on the other computer screen, I have all my audio lined up. But what I do, and I've been doing this forever, is that I'm sitting here right now with a pen in hand and two sheets of paper, and a lot of times I just sit here and doodle, but when you start saying something that I think is that I need to respond to, I will mark it down. And then hopefully when there's a break and I can tie it into what you're saying, I can bring it back up again. But again, this has been a lot of years of practice to being able to do it, because there have been times in my early days where I would get lost in conversation, and either you were saying something and I was listening, and then all of a sudden I went off into a different direction, and I couldn't bring myself back to where you were, or I couldn't bring you to where I was, and it just got very confusing. So after years of practice, it's been much easier. And one thing that does frustrate people when they see me work, because when I do this live, I do the same thing. I have a pen in hand, paper in front of me, and I draw houses and faces and stuff like that. And they get worried because they think I'm writing down questions. And I said, no, it's just me drawing, because it's me releasing stress, because it helps me listen better because I'm able to focus on it. And I never do this. I never have a list of questions. The first question I ask is, can you explain to me who you are? And then once you start doing that, is then when I go into who you are, what you're doing, why you're doing it, and how you're helping people like we're doing this evening. So it's much more of a free form for me, because it's just the way I do it. And that's also why my program is structured the way it is. For a lot of people, they're not used to it, because talk radio used to be this way. Unfortunately, it's become so political in the last 20 years that it's all argumentative and there's no real dialogue going back and forth. What you and I are doing here is a lost art, which the dialogue going back and forth.
And one of the reasons why I think podcasting is so popular these days is exactly that. Yeah, it's the conversation, isn't it? It's the two people actually having a bit of a banter back and forth, responding to each other, collaborating to create something great as opposed to competing.
So how much editing, and I know this is one of the things that people fall back on, but how much editing do you recommend? Because like I said, when I do mine, mine is done as a live program. There's no interruptions. And if I have to drop anything in, I will do it live. But do you tell your audience to, or tell your student or whatever you want to call them, to do it as a live recording or let them record bits and pieces?
Yeah, so I mean, certainly in the early days, I encourage people as much as possible to treat it as if it is a live broadcast.
Okay.
As if it is something that's just going to go out the way it is. Because it's the biggest thing that kills shows is editing. People sort of think in the early days, they want it to be perfect. They're too perfectionist. They start doing a recording, and then they pull it into their editing platform, and then they start editing out ums and ahs and little tiny gaps and stuff like that. And it's unsustainable. It just takes too long. It's really boring as well, for another matter. So I try and encourage people to think of it as you've got your time limit, you've got 20, 30 minutes. Just start speaking. If you make any mistakes, then just, you know, say, oh, no, that's not what I meant to say. I apologize. This is what I meant. And if you have any huge gaps, then fine, we can edit them out, but try and keep the editing as little as humanly possible. That's tends to be how I try and do it.
It makes it difficult because an audience can hear editing, especially if you're not used to doing it. They can hear poor editing. And when you hear poor editing, you're wondering what you're hiding from the audience. What was said, what was mistake, what are you hiding from me that you don't want me to know? And that can turn a listener off real quick. Now, what editing, because there's so many editing softwares out there, what editing softwares do you recommend?
Yeah, I mean, one of the great ones out there has been a good option is Audacity. Audacity is free, costs nothing. It's pretty old-fashioned. It's a bit clunky. It's got a bit of a steep learning curve because it's got a ton of editing tools in there. I mean, it's designed for proper audio engineering, but it is perfectly fine. I mean, one of the reasons we created our tool, so we have our own editing tool, Ality. That's the tool I talked about earlier. It's designed to help people create a podcast. You can record your show in there. You can edit in there, cut out your mistakes. It does all the cleanup automatically, so it does the noise reduction, the leveling, all that kind of stuff. We created that because we found that was one of the biggest barriers to people. They would open up Audacity, they would open up Audition, these tools that are designed for audio engineering, and there's just too much in there. It's too much to learn. You have to know what a bit is, what compression is, what EQ is. You have to know all these frequencies and all this stuff. So that's why we created Audacity. It's obviously a paid subscription, though. So Audacity is still totally, I would recommend that if you just need someone for free, if you're low budget. But yeah, there's a few out there. I would say, yeah, Audacity for free. Audition is a free, is a paid professional platform. And our platform, Ality, is for the people that just want to make it easy.
Yeah, Audition can get pricey after a while. I've used it for years. And it's a great tool if you know how to use it, if you were taught properly.
Yeah.
But again, if you're trying to teach someone how to use it, there is a learning curve on it. So that's one of the things. Now, you made a comment about the ums and ands, which I think is very interesting. Now, to let you know what I do Monday through Friday during the day is I'm a teacher. I teach communications on a secondary level. And I've been talking to my students about ums and ands. And recently I came across something, and I never thought of this before, and I'll throw this out to you, that ums and ands aren't really us trying to delay conversation. It's actually letting us tell the listener that we have something else to say. Just hold on and we'll get to it eventually. It's like placers that we're putting in our speech.
Yeah, totally agree. And it just makes you sound natural. It sounds more human. It's actually, Well, Kat, you get really good presenters that won't do any ums or ahs or ers or whatever it is, any place words, any crutch words. Some presenters can do that and they can sound good and polished, but even then it sounds a little bit unnatural. It sounds unrealistic. It sounds unreal. It's almost the difference between podcasting and video, you know, that kind of really right. over-polished look, which personalizes the person a little bit. It's a wee barrier between you and them. Whereas if you're hearing somebody speak, and they just speak like a human being, which means stumbling over some words, which means saying, every now and again, it makes them sound more personable, more identifiable, more just like you, which in podcasting, like I said, it's that personal, it's that one-to-one, the friendship. We're not standing on a pedestal above people lecturing down. We're speaking into your head as a friend. And that's where the connection comes from. So yeah, totally. I think editing them out. I mean, you can always get too many. Like you do get some people that have to try and learn to cut them down. But I think editing them out entirely is usually a mistake.
Now, a question I have, and I probably would have never thought to ask this to anybody else but you because of your accent. When you're doing a podcast and you know it's going worldwide, do you get self-confident or self-conscious of that accent, that you're worried that some of the words you're saying people are not going to understand?
It's a good question. I've certainly learned to moderate my accent a little bit if I know that it's going to an international audience. And I don't have a strong Scottish accent by any means. So like you get a lot of people, I speak to some people locally that, you know, if I put them out in a podcast, you wouldn't have a clue what they're talking about, from Glasgow or from Inverness or something like that. But I mean, I think it's part of the personality, it's part of the uniqueness. I think I've managed to sort of engage with people a little bit more in some ways because my accent's maybe a bit more unusual. So it's kind of, I certainly don't grudge it, and I don't feel nervous about it. But you're right, I do think about making sure I'm understandable, because anything unfamiliar, it can get in the way of your message. So it's worth considering.
Yeah, because my program got picked up a year ago on a station in Scunthorpe, United Kingdom, and I couldn't figure out why they wanted me, of all people, over there, which is great. I think it's wonderful. But I know that because where I'm located at, I'm located just south of the city of Pittsburgh in Pennsylvania, and we have a very odd way of speaking, and I have to make sure that when I talk, I don't throw any of those regionalisms in, because if I do, I know I'm going to lose audience, and I don't want to lose anybody, because if I use a term that you're not familiar with that we are familiar with, then that's going to alienate somebody. And that's even in other parts of the United States, that I could say something that they won't.
Yeah, I'm sure
they won't get. So again, I was just curious if you make notice of that, and if you try to overcorrect, or if you just try to correct enough just to get through it. So I think it's very interesting to be able to talk that.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I think there's a balance, isn't there? Because those words can be really, really valuable in some ways, because if you don't, you throw in too many, and absolutely you'll alienate people because they don't actually understand what you're talking about. But putting in some of the more local words, So I'm in Australia right now, which is a whole different ballgame. I'm actually trying to be understood by Australians at the moment, and I keep going to the coffee shop, and I say every time I order a coffee, I say I'll take a long black with a wee splash of milk, please, and they all go a what? They don't understand the wee splash of milk. But most people, whenever I go to the US, you guys all understand the word wee for some reason.
Yes,
I don't know. It's kind of snuck into your parlance. But it's definitely got a Scottish tinge to it. Mm-hmm. And it adds that personality. It's that people love it. They say, oh, he said wee. So I think there's a balance, as in you can add a lot more personality, a lot more kind of connection through having some of your local dialect in there. But yeah, not going over the top so that you're literally incomprehensible.
The one, and I don't use it as much anymore, the one that we use here is when we're talking about you and we're talking a group of people, we don't say you, we say yuns or yins, and people will look at you and say, what are you saying? And I'm going, that's just what it is. It's how yins doing. Like down south, they would say, how y'all doing? We say, how yin's doing? And they look at you like, you're nuts. But again, it's one of those things where,
I've not heard that one.
Where how, well, now you know it. So now when you say these things, it all comes out. And again, I think what it does is it does eventually make the world a much smaller place, because we never thought programming like this would go internationally. I'm always surprised on how many people are listening to me in other parts of the world other than where I would assume they'd be listening at. And some of the emails that I've gotten over the years, I had a faithful listener years ago that was from Ireland that would call me occasionally, and just listening to him and the conversation back and forth just broadened my horizons, because it was something that I would have never talked to. He was 18 years old, and he was talking to me about going to university and how education system was different there, and so on and so forth. So again, I think we can open a lot of doors up by doing this and by being open-minded enough that we can just invite the world to participate. But and one last question.
That's the lovely thing, the connections you can make. It's great. So good.
Now, the one last thing I want to ask you, and I've always done it this way for this reason, is, do you believe that whoever's doing a podcast, they should do it at the same time, the same day every week, just so they can create consistency?
Yeah, so there's two sides to this, I think, which is podcasting is brilliant in how flexible it is. So you can make a show anywhere, anytime, any place, any length. So that, we talked about that earlier, didn't we? The difference in radio and podcasting is so much more flexible. But on the other hand, that flexibility does a bit of unpredictability and does eat into your consistency. Absolutely. I can't remember where the saying was attributed, but something like discipline is, you know, discipline creates freedom. Mm-hmm. So for me, certainly, I get more freedom from stress, from, worrying about getting my content out consistently. I feel more free when I do stick to the same day and at the same time every single week and create our show. Okay. So Tuesday mornings is often my content creating time. Every Tuesday morning, I know I wake up and I don't have to decide anything. I don't have to use any willpower. I just get up, I come through and I look at my plan. What's the next bit of content I have to create? Right, do it. Just write it or speak it or record it, whatever it might be. So yeah, for sure. I think it helps a lot.
So Colin, I really appreciate you taking time talking to me this evening. So what time is it in Australia right now?
Right now it's 1:30 in the afternoon.
Okay, so you're a day ahead of me. Can you tell me if they never
mind. I am.
Anyway.
The future looks bright.
I was going to ask you to predict the future for me 12 hours from now, but I don't know if you can do that or not. But anyhow, I really appreciate you taking time joining me this evening, and at least evening on my side of the world. And I appreciate you talking to me. If there's anything you'd like to tell my audience, how do they get a hold of you if they want to talk to you about creating a podcast, and give them some information about your website too?
Thank you. No, just to say as well, thanks for having me. It's been a great, or a good conversation. If anyone wants to, if you want to start a podcast, if you're out there listening, you think you want to try it out, we have an article, our big massive guide on how to start a podcast. It keeps it as simple as possible. You can find it over at thepodcasthost.com/start. And our tool Alitu as well, that just makes it easy to create it. So if you fancied using that to record, to edit, to do the cleanup and to publish to the podcast host as well, just go over and you can find that at alitu.com, alitu.com.
Well, Colin, I appreciate it. Thank you very much for joining me. And maybe one of these days we'll have you back on again and we'll talk some more.
Absolutely. That'd be great. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You have a great night. Bye-bye.
Cheers. You too.
Colin Gray from the podcast host, talking about how to create a podcast, why you want to create a podcast, and everybody can create a podcast if they want to talk. Again, I think it's a great idea. I think it's a great website. I had the opportunity to look through it the last couple of weeks to see what advice was out there. And I'll be honest with you, there's some that I could still use. And I've been doing this for how long? So anyhow, that's going to wrap up this edition of Online with Bill Alexander. You guys have a great week. We'll talk to you next time here online with yours truly, Bill Alexander.
This has been a Million Dollar Baby production. For more information, go to italknet.com.
UnitedHealthcare has rejected every solution to restore your in-network access to your Montefiore doctors and hospital. Sadly, it seems United's decision is permanent. Keeping the doctors you know, who know you, is one of the most important things you can do for your health, and all other national insurers have your doctor in-network. Your Montefiore doctors can't make United fix this, but they are still here for you. Visit keepmontefiore.org or call us at 855-226-3071 and let us help.
If you've ever been a renter, you know it's stressful to find a place with everything you love and nothing you don't. But did you know Zillow does rentals? It makes the search so easy. They have filters for pretty much everything, so you can find that place that's in your budget, but also isn't a shoebox. Or a place that's close to your parents, but far enough they have to call first. Plus, it's easy to apply, request tours, and pay rent in the app. Head to ZillowRentals.com and find your sweet spot.